All this season, Pulse 2 will be taking a look at the history of the Rugby Football League with our game caller Mick Gledel and sport historian Tony Collins as it celebrates its 125-year anniversary. In this episode, Mick and Tony discuss the rule changes to a 13-a-side in 1906 and then the very first Rugby League internationals in 1907.
Two crucial years, almost as crucial as 1895, in Rugby League history, 1906, 1907. 1906, the clubs in the Rugby League decide finally to move to 13-a-side, an idea that had been around since even before the split, going back to 1891. And they also decide, after long, long, long debates, to get rid of the ruck and the maul from the game. They even, at one point, they even tried to get rid of the ruck and the maul by having a scrum after every tackle. But by 1906, it's clearly this has become ridiculous. There are, you know, almost hundreds of scrums in a match. And so they decide to bring in the play of the ball. And what, you know, the origins of the modern play of the ball. In those days, it was seen as more like a mini scrum, and players could strike for the ball. You could kick the ball forward. It was really old school. So it wasn't quite the same, but the principle was established in 1906. So we had 13-a-side, the play of the ball finally introduced, and it's kind of, this is the core of what we know today as modern rugby league. The year after, even probably even more momentous, was that the Rugby Football League received a letter completely out of the blue from a bloke called Albert Baskerville in New Zealand, asking them if they would be interested if he brought over a team of New Zealand rugby players to play rugby league in Britain. And of course they think, wow, this is what we've been waiting for. Those, you know, the past 12 years we've only been played in England. There's a bit of expansion going on in Wales at the same time. But New Zealand, and you've got to remember at this time, New Zealand is seen as the leading rugby country, because in 1905, just 2 years earlier, the All Blacks had made their first tour of Britain and they defeated every team in England by massive amounts. The only team that beat them was Wales, and that was because New Zealand had a disputed try disallowed. And so for a team to come back from New Zealand, it's difficult to imagine what the Northern Union must have felt, because it was like, this is your dream come true. And so and Baskerville manages to recruit four of those All Blacks. Apparently other ones wanted to come but were sort of seen past the prime. Brings a really good team. They're called the Professional All Blacks, although later they're nicknamed the All Girls, because a lot of the press were quite derogatory and said they're only in it for the money, which wasn't true, because they actually ran the team as a kind of collective. So the tour profits were shared between all the players. So they turned up. So the Professional All Blacks, as they were known, the Rugby League Tourists, first ever Rugby League Tourists, turn up at Leeds beginning of September, and they're met with this massive crowd in the middle of Leeds. They get off the train and they must have wondered what had happened, because they couldn't move for people there. And they finally managed to get into what was called then a charabang, an open top motor coach, and they go through the streets of Leeds. They're being cheered. You'd think they'd, they were the conquering war heroes or something like that. And I think the reason why people were so excited was because it was like, this is it. We've demonstrated now that our game can be played by anybody, and it's been played now by the best rugby players in the world. And the interesting thing is, though, once they play the Northern Union teams, they find it's completely different to playing rugby union. And you get one of the players who was an All Black in 1905, came back with the 1907 Rugby League Tourists, wrote back in the 1920s to John Wilson, who was the secretary of the Rugby League at that time. He wrote back and said, John, it's difficult to explain how different it was to play against Northern Union clubs, even compared to Rugby Union internationals. Because when you played a Northern Union club, every match was an international. Every match was tough. You could never take anything for granted. You couldn't take your foot off the gas at any point. And so you could tell they were up against really good rugby players. And it demonstrated the standard of the Northern Union, the fact that even these All Blacks were struggling. In the end, once they got the hang of the game, they proved to be really good at it. And they actually won that first test series. They beat the British side, which is then called the Northern Union. They beat 2-1. But that really established the game, because the other thing that Baskerville's All Girls did was that on the way to Britain, they played against what became the Australian National Rugby League team. The first games were under rugby union rules because the rugby league rule books didn't arrive in time. But that laid the basis for the start of the first ever Sydney Premiership in 1908. And at the end of that season, the first Kangaroos came to Britain. So you see, those 2 years, 1906, 1907, then 1908, were absolutely crucial because they took us from being, in a sense, still playing a version of rugby union rules. Very different ideas, different tactics, but still 15-a-side. We go to 13-a-side. The next year, we're an international game. We've got regular touring sides from New Zealand and Australia coming over. And if you like, modern rugby league is born.
Thanks for listening to the story of the RFL 125 years. Don't forget, you can hear previous episodes on the Pulse 2 website.